notches. Under high magnification, the borders could be seen clearly. They were not smooth, but slightly notched. They looked almost like a gear from the inside of a watch.
I'll be damned, Levitt said.
As they watched, it happened. The green spot turned purple for a fraction of a second, less than the blink of an eye. Then it turned green once more.
Did you see that?
I saw it. You didn't change the lighting?
No, didn't touch it.
And then, as they watched, the spot turned purple and remained purple. The notches disappeared. The spot had enlarged slightly, filling in the V-shaped gaps. It was now a complete circle. It became green once more. It's growing, Stone said. Burton was working in the autopsy room. He was nervous and tense, still bothered by his memories of Piedmont. Weeks later, in reviewing his work and his thoughts on Level 5, he regretted his inability to concentrate, because in his initial series of experiments, Burton had made several mistakes. According to the protocol, he was required to carry out autopsies on dead animals, but he was also in charge of preliminary vector experiments. They were reasonably simple and straightforward, designed to answer the question of how the disease was transmitted. Burton began with a series of cages lined up in a row. Each had a separate air supply. The air supplies could be interconnected in a variety of ways. Burton placed the corpse of the dead Norway rat, which was contained in an airtight cage, alongside another cage containing a living rat. He punched buttons. Air was allowed to pass freely from one cage to the other. The living rat flopped over and died. Interesting, he thought. Airborne transmission. He hooked up a second cage with a live rat, but inserted a millipore filter between the living and dead rat cages. This filter had perforations 100 angstroms in diameter, the size of a small virus. He opened the passage between the two cages. The rat remained alive. He watched for several moments until he was satisfied. Whatever it was that transmitted the disease, it was larger than a virus. He changed the filter, replacing it with a larger one, and then another still larger. He continued in this way until the rat died. Yet clearly no gas was responsible. The disease was transmitted by something the size of a cell that was very much bigger than a molecule or gas droplet. The next step was equally simple, to determine whether dead animals were potentially infectious. He took one of the dead rats and pumped the air out of its cage. He waited until the air was fully evacuated. In the pressure fall, the rat ruptured, bursting open. Burton ignored this. When he was sure all air was removed, he replaced the air with fresh, clean, filtered air. Then he connected the cage to the cage of a living animal. Nothing happened. The live rat scampered about its cage happily. The results were quite clear. Dead animals were not infectious. That was why he thought the buzzards could chew at the Piedmont victims and not die. Corpses could not transmit the disease. Only the bugs themselves, carried in the air, could do so.